Welcome to Season 5 of the Raise Your Game Show, a podcast that deconstructs the principles of high performance in sports and business. I'm your host, Alan Stein Jr. Throughout this season of the podcast, I have been interviewing myself. That's right, I've made time to pick my own brain and ask myself a series of brilliant and innovative questions that only I can ask. And only I can answer. But I recently had a scheduling conflict and couldn't make time to sit down with myself. So for this very special episode, I brought in my brother to interview me.
What did you say?
That's right, my brother Jeremy Stein, who serves as my own personal digital ninja and who is a veteran podcast host and producer in his own right, will take my place as a guest host and ask me a series of thought-provoking questions.
Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers gotta hug.
Wait till you hear my riveting answers. I couldn't be more excited to have him replace me and ask myself questions about a recent endurance event I participated in called Last Man Standing. As always, I hope this episode helps you raise your game.
Booyakasha, check this out, yo.
And now, on with the show.
Alan, will you tell us a little bit about the recent Last Man Standing event that you participated in up in Maine?
Most certainly. I'm actually still feeling some of the soreness from the event. It was actually this past Saturday, which was September 5th. Up in Pineland Farms, Maine, and it's what's classified as an ultra endurance event. Anything that's longer than a traditional 26.2 mile marathon is deemed an ultra event. And ultra events can be anything from a 50K to 100K to a 50 miler to a 100 miler. But what made this event incredibly unique was there was a 4.2 mile loop, and it was a trail run, actually a beautiful run through the woods in a very scenic area part of Maine. And you run a 4.2 mile loop, the start and the finish were very close to each other, and you have 60 minutes to complete that loop. And then they start the next round or the next loop every hour on the hour. So you had 60 minutes to complete it. So for anyone that's mathematically challenged, if you finished it in 58 minutes, you have 8 minutes to rest before they'll start the next one. And as soon as you cannot complete a loop under 60 minutes, or you are not at the starting line to start the next loop, then you're out and or disqualified. And of course, you could pull yourself out at any time. And the goal was to see who the last man standing was. And I will say that man was in air quotes because there were several female participants who were absolutely extraordinary. So I guess technically it was the last person standing. And yeah, that was the goal. This was the fifth year that they've done this particular event here in Maine. And it's really built up some steam. I mean, there were some really elite ultra endurance runners there. You know, for some of the folks that are familiar with my journey, if you've read Raise Your Game, you know, there's a rather comical story about the only marathon that I've ever run back in 2002. And of course, a marathon is 26.2 miles. But if memory serves, I was only able to run about 17 or 18 of that and then had to basically walk and or crawl to finish it. And this time I was able to do 9 loops, which was just under 40 miles. So almost a marathon and a half. And you know, during our conversation, I'll explain why I think I was able to do that, especially on such short notice. But I'll just say that it was a flawlessly run event. The people that put this on, you know, this was very unique for them putting on an event during COVID. And, you know, they were so on point. They did everything possible to ensure a safe environment, and they were incredibly responsible and respectful of everyone there and really did a brilliant job. You know, a lot of the people I was talking to, they do dozens of these events a year, and they've said that almost everything has been canceled since March because of the, you know, COVID-19. And this was one of the first groups that was kind of brave enough to try to do it with some, you know, some tweaks to the normal format, and they did it brilliantly. So it was a top five experience that I've ever had as far as participating in things.
So knowing the story, which I, of course, am familiar with, of you doing the Baltimore Marathon, what made you decide to sign up for this so many years later, as you know, you're getting into your 40s and all during this pandemic, especially, why did you decide to do this?
Well, you're very kind and polite to say getting into my 40s, considering I'll be 45 in January. So yeah, I'm almost on the back nine of my 40s. To be honest with you, Jeremy, there's two areas of my life that through constant self-reflection, I've decided that I really need to improve and level up on. One of those is, you know, and it's always funny when I'm talking to you when I say growing up, because obviously you grew up right next to me. So this is more for the listeners. But I always grew up with this scarcity mindset, kind of a mindset of there's never enough, and that you always need to hoard and to hold on to the things that you do have. And I'm really trying to shift and to have much more of an abundance mindset. And part of that mindset is I've lived a very conservative life. I've never been a huge daredevil, and I've never been a huge risk taker. And while I never want to be a reckless human being, I want to start playing bigger in every area of my life. In many areas, I think I look back and think, you know, I played it safe. I played it small. And I want to start taking more risks and really, really stepping outside of my comfort zone. So that's one area that I want to improve. But the reason that I signed up for this is the other area that I want to improve. And as confident as I am, and having done so many wonderful things and met so many wonderful people, I still too struggle with having some limiting beliefs and thinking about certain things. And my immediate default to certain things has always been, oh, I could never do that. And I don't want that to be my default anymore. You know, and I remember, you know, and it doesn't matter what it is. You know, I hear a story of somebody, you know, biking 400 miles, and my immediate thought is, oh man, I could never do that. Or, you know, lots of people jump out of airplanes. And while I have no desire to do that, my default has always been, oh, I could never do that. And I just don't want that to be my default anymore. So about 5 weeks ago from now, a friend of mine named Mark Nealon, him and his wife, Christy, are remarkable endurance athletes, and they just completed the last man standing as well. He just sent me a quick message on Facebook and said, hey, here's the next thing I'm jumping into. It's this last man standing event. Would you like to join us? And my immediate thought, not my response, my thought was, oh, I can't do that. And I just slept on it for a night. And when I woke up the next day, I had this clarity of thought and just said, you know what, just sign up for it. You know, just jump in. I know you don't think you can do it. I know you don't particularly want to do it, but if you're going to change this pattern and this behavior you've had in your life, then you need to start changing the way you respond to things. So I hit him back and said, you know what, I'm in, let's do it. And I registered that morning and sent off my money and basically made a commitment. And then, as I like to do, I posted that on social because I like the extra accountability that I get from people that follow me on social. So once I had put it out there in the world, I was in and I was committed. And I just took that step in that direction. And, you know, I still revert back every now and then. There are still certain things that pop up that my default is I can't do that. But at least now I'm aware of it and I can learn to take a breath and then be able to move, you know, be able to move forward. And I'm so glad that I did. You know, I'm, as we discuss kind of the way that everything unfolded and some of the lessons I learned, I mean, I'm still, I don't consider myself an ultra marathoner by any means, but I'm glad that I signed up for something that I didn't think that I could do.
So if memory serves me, you know, going back to the Baltimore Marathon, one of the things that I think I remember is that you hadn't properly trained. You know, you were obviously much younger. You were in great shape. You're still in great shape today. But I know you took a very different approach to this event. So what's changed since all those years ago in the approach that you took to the Last Man Standing event? And how did you prepare for it?
Well, when I look back on the Baltimore Marathon, I was able to train for, I don't remember offhand, I would say 3 to 4 months to prepare for it. But what hindsight taught me was the preparation and training that I did just wasn't as specific as it needed to be. So it wasn't that I went into the Baltimore Marathon having not trained or thinking that I didn't need to train. I just didn't do the best type of training. And of course, with my background in performance, you know, this would be, you know, a basketball player that trains for the basketball season by running cross country. like they're just not a great, they're not a great fit. So I did not do proper training for the marathon. Although what I was doing at the time, I thought was, you know, the best route to go, which makes this story even sweeter, because for the Baltimore Marathon, I trained for 3 to 4 months and struggled to run 26.2 miles. For the last man standing, I trained for 3 or 4 weeks and was able to run almost the equivalent of 1.5 marathons. And part of that was definitely due to the training. Part of that was due to the nutrition. But I think the biggest part of it was the mindset and the self-talk. As I say in the book, when I recount that marathon story, you know, I really let the negative self-talk take over. As soon as I hit that wall around mile 17 or 18, you know, I just kept telling myself, you can't finish this. You know, this is awful. You're never going to make it. Why did you sign up? And I really let it consume me. Whereas this time, when I started to hit that wall, and I hit it probably around lap 5 or 6, I was able to talk myself through it. And I knew going into this, I was not going to be the last man standing. My goal going into this was not to win it, and it was not to be the best. My goal was simply to go and to do my best. And for frame of reference, you know, for anyone that hasn't been following on social, so I ran 9 full loops, which was just under 40 miles. The winner ran 32 loops, which was just shy of 150 miles. So when I say these folks are superhuman when it comes to endurance, you know, it's pretty remarkable. And when we get to the part about sharing some lessons, that is one of the biggest lessons that I always talk about, is not playing that comparison game. Because if I compare my 9 loops to his 32 loops, I would feel pretty bad about that performance. But I won't allow that to happen, because I want to feel good about what I did. But back to your original question. So the training for this, I do think I was able to mimic the training needed for the event much better this time than I did for the Baltimore Marathon. I also was able to switch my nutrition up, which was a big difference for me, because I started eating a lot of very carbohydrate-rich foods that I hadn't been eating very regularly before. So I changed my training, I changed my diet, but I most certainly changed my mindset. And I think that's what allowed me to do a much better job this time. But the best part was, it's not even just about performing at a higher level. This was so much more of an enriching experience, because I left it thinking, you know what? You did the best you could. You left it all out on the course. You know, this was fun. There was nothing fun about the Baltimore Marathon in 2002 for me.
So I know that your overall goal was to do the absolute best that you can, but was there a number in the back of your mind that you knew you wanted to hit as far as laps went? And, you know, when you finally did decide to bow out, how much of that was based on physical and how much of that was based on mental?
Several awesome questions. One of the reasons that I don't have huge aspirations to get into the endurance field is because the training is so time consuming. And, you know, I have other things going on in my life that I personally don't want to spend hours every day running. For one, and I say this with a, you know, tongue in cheek and a little bit of a smile, I really don't enjoy running. You know, I've always enjoyed sports where running is kind of your vehicle, but I've never just enjoyed running. Now, I was able to get into a little bit of a zone during this training, because I'd pop on some audiobooks and would enjoy going for, you know, some leisurely 4 to 5 mile runs a couple times a day, and listen to some great books and so forth. So it was manageable for a month, but I simply don't love running. In my training, the most I was able to do were basically the equivalent of 3 loops. I've got a lake here by my apartment, which you've seen before, and 6 laps around the lake equaled 4.5 miles. So a couple of times I did my best to mimic that. I would run 4.5 miles, rest the remaining time under the hour, and then start again. But the most I ever did was 3 of those. And, you know, of course, that still took 3 hours of time, which is about the most I want to devote to training when I've got other things going on in my life. So with that in mind, in my head, I thought, if I can double whatever I did in training on game day, I'd feel pretty good about that. If I could do 6, I'd feel pretty good. And then I asked your nephew, as in niece, Lila, Luke, and Jack, what they thought, what they set the over under at. And they said 7, which was a pretty educated guess. So then in my mind, I was like, I got to do a little bit better than what the kids think I'm capable of doing. So when I went into it, my mind was, if I can do anywhere between 6 and 8, I'll feel pretty good. And to be quite honest, when I finished number 8, I was about ready to call it quits because I was pretty fried. But then I thought, let's get in one more than you thought you could get in. And I was running that 9th one. And I didn't think when I started it that I was going to be able to complete it under 60 minutes because I was pretty fried. But I allowed the positive self-talk to push me a little further. And I finished that last one in 56 minutes. But then I decided I was going to go ahead and pull it at that. I gave everything that I had to finish that 9th one. And I didn't want to risk hurting myself or doing anything foolish trying to squeeze in a 10th. So I just bowed out gracefully. But to answer your question, cardiovascularly, I felt great. Mindset was pretty strong, but my legs were wrecked. One of the lessons that I learned that if I go back and do this event again, all of my training took place on pavement. You know, there's a sidewalk around the lake. There's another sidewalk in the neighborhood. And this was a trail run, which means it's very rocky. There's little divots, there's rocks, and that can wreak havoc on your ankles and calves. So my calves literally felt like they had knots in them starting around lap 3 or 4. And then because there was a lot more hills on this course than I was used to training, my quads were fried too. So I simply just couldn't get my legs to move anymore after the 9th one. But my mind was pretty good, and my cardiovascular system was pretty good. So the way I look at it, if I were to try that again, and I may do the one again next summer, I'll need to change my training so that my legs and my muscular system are a little bit more prepared to maybe eke out another 1 or 2 laps around, you know, maybe be able to do 11 or 12 next time.
Well, if you remember, I did guess at 10 laps, so I was pretty close. So
you were very close.
Yeah, very, very happy to see what you completed. So you said that during your training, your playlist and what you would listen to was a lot of different audiobooks, which I know you're a big fan of. What was your actual playlist on race day?
None, just my thoughts.
Wow.
So I chose not to bring anything with me. Now, a couple of things. One, as you know, just from knowing me and from knowing the marathon story, one of the reasons that I'm not very aligned with endurance running is I don't have much of an internal pacing system. Having played basketball and short duration, high burst, high intensity sports my whole life, I'm always programmed to go as hard and as fast as I can. And being able to pull back and run at a submaximal level is very foreign to me. So what I found during my training, if I was listening to some old school hip hop, you know, I'd put on a DMX playlist. The fast beat actually made me run faster than I wanted to run. You know, I was doing, you know, I would complete a mile in 6:30 or 7 minutes when I was trying to do it in 9 or 10. Like I wanted to go slower. So my switch for that was to listen to an audiobook, because that actually helped me slow down because the pace is much slower. And I figured, you know, if, you know, my last 2 weeks of training, I ran close to 50 miles throughout the week of training. So I was able to log some pretty serious audiobook time as well. And that was the other thing. You know, I figure if I'm going to spend that time out there, why do I need to listen to a DMX song from the late 90s that I can already recite word for word when I could be filling my brain with something that could actually help me improve? And there was a huge satisfaction from coming back from a run going, man, I just fed my body and I just fed my mind. That was time very well invested for me. So my plan for the race was to not listen to anything. And as I looked around the other runners, I think I only saw 1 or 2 people that had earbuds in. For the most part, no one else did. But I did think that, you know, when I got to the lap where I thought I was finished, that I could have thrown on the DMX or something to give me that extra jolt, but I decided not to. But one of the things that made this such a rewarding experience was the conversations that I was able to have while running. You know, I would kind of latch on with another person or a small group. And because we were running at a slower pace, what's called a conversational pace, where we could talk and not lose breath, I met some great people and I had some awesome chats. And it's really remarkable the difference, like how quickly 50 minutes can go by when you're in an engrossing conversation with someone that's really interesting versus that last lap. I literally ran in the dark with my headlamp and didn't run with anyone because I was so far behind. You know, that last lap by myself felt like it took 6 hours. And some of the other ones where I'm talking with really interesting people, they went by so quick. So yeah, that part I found really, really neat.
So I know you touched a little bit here and there on some different lessons, but you know, we can kind of start to wrap it up, I think, with what are the overarching lessons that you learned from participating in this event?
The first is, and I'm not the one that came up with this. I don't know who came up with this slogan. It may be Jesse Itzler, because he's got so many you know, different sayings and mindsets that I've gravitated towards. But there's a mindset that many of the people at this event have, and it's called put the next thing on your calendar. And here's what everyone says. So all of these folks were saying, as soon as Last Man Standing was over, they were joking with each other and saying, all right, what's the next thing you've got on your calendar? What are you going to put on your calendar? And for these folks, it's almost always something based on the physical. And it's almost always something that most people would look at as being certifiably crazy. But their goal is to always have the next thing on the calendar. And sometimes the next thing is 3 weeks away. Sometimes it's 3 months away. And then, of course, with COVID-19, that means something could be postponed even longer. But the goal is, as soon as you complete something, you put the next thing on your calendar. And I really fell in love with that concept. So for this last 4 weeks, you know, I've been fairly focused and consumed with doing the best I can at Last Man Standing. Now that is over, I have to put the next thing on my calendar, which I have already done. I was hoping to do a Navy SEAL type training later this month, but unfortunately that got postponed because they could not get enough people to register, mostly because of COVID. So what I have signed up for is what's called a rim to rim run in the Grand Canyon at the end of October. And I'm going to use some notes here because I'm going to print out I printed out a quick paragraph of my next thing on the calendar. This north to south traverse of the Grand Canyon is a once in a lifetime bucket list achievement. Starting at 8,250 feet, we will descend a vertical mile over 14 miles on the North Calabib Trail to the historic Phantom Ranch. After the most refreshing lemonade to ever quench your thirst, we will climb 10 miles to 4,700 feet via the Bright Angel Trail to the promised land of the South Rim. Bring your A game. This hike is not for the faint of heart or the weak of mind. So in the Grand Canyon, I'm going to hike 24 miles, so almost the equivalent of a marathon. But this time it won't be a run. It'll be much more of a steady hike. But that is the next thing that's on my calendar. And then once that thing's done, I'll make sure I put something else. So that was really the first lesson. The second is what I had said earlier, that sometimes you just got to say yes to something that you would naturally say no to. Say yes to something that you're a little fearful of, a little anxious of, have some insecurities around. You know, if there's something that you don't think you're capable of doing, do the hardest part, which is taking that first step and just saying yes and signing up for it. And, you know, that was one of the cool parts too about this experience. You've got folks that could only run two or three loops, and then you had folks that ran 32 loops to win the whole thing. And yet the camaraderie and the enthusiasm and the support for everybody, I mean, was palpable. So while many of those folks had the goal of being the last person standing, anyone that was there, everyone was basically treated with respect of, hey, you're kind of in the club. You're trying to do something really challenging. And as long as you're going after your personal best, that's something you should be proud of. The next lesson would be also something I teed up earlier, is making sure that you don't play the comparison game. You know, don't compare how many you did to someone else. Don't think less of what you were able to accomplish because someone else was able to accomplish more. And that's something that I really realized. You know, as I mentioned, my friend Mark Nealon and his wife Christy, Mark was able to do 24 loops because his goal was to run 100 miles, and he did that, you know, with 24 loops. And Christy was able to run 12. So she ran over 50 miles. So what those two did was absolutely extraordinary. And they were the ones that, you know, as I said, were the ones that kind of encouraged me and invited me to come partake. But they'll be the first to tell you that, you know, it's a dangerous game playing that comparison game. But what they also reminded me of was that in this area, it'd be easy for me to compare myself to one of the other elite runners and maybe feel bad. But there's most likely something that I do in my life that they would compare themselves to and feel bad as well. You know, I mean, we always joke that one of the biggest human fears in existence is professional speaking. So I can promise you there was a runner there who might be slightly envious of the fact that I feel comfortable on stage in front of hundreds or thousands of people and they don't. So I'm looking at them like they're superhuman because they can run 100 miles. They're looking at me like I'm superhuman because I can get on stage in front of a few hundred people. So it just reminded me that all of us have strengths, all of us have gifts, all of us have talents, and it's important to be proud of those things and to continue to try to level those things up, but don't ever get caught playing the comparison game with someone else because it's just not worth it. And then really the last lessons I learned were some minor tweaks that I'll make. If I decide to make this particular event an annual event, and if I go back next year, then I'll have a baseline, and my baseline will be, can I beat 9 loops? You know, can I tweak my training and my nutrition to the point where I can get 10 or 11 or 12? And that would be a fun challenge as well. So that's kind of really the summary of the whole thing, but I just can't stress enough what a remarkable experience it was. And for someone that doesn't even enjoy running, to spend an entire weekend built around running, I was pleasantly surprised.
So I know this event and the one you're doing in October are, you know, considered endurance style events, and your whole goal has been to no longer say, you know, automatically say no to things that come at you like this. Outside of endurance, and I know you mentioned you don't particularly want to jump out of an airplane, is there anything else that's on your radar that you kind of want to push yourself to do that you normally would have said no automatically to in the past?
Well, you and I share a good mutual friend. We call him Burley, but his name is Michael Caron, who runs a remarkable business called Get Burley. And he was actually in the general vicinity of where we were. He lives in Massachusetts, but we were in Maine. So I was able to have lunch with him before we left. And we talked about a few of those types of things. And yeah, there's actually a couple of things on my radar that I want to see if I enjoyed more than the endurance stuff. One I mentioned earlier, which is a Navy SEAL type of training event. There's a few different groups out there that do their best to simulate BUDS training for a much smaller window of time and something that's safe for civilians. You know, I would never in a million years act like what these things are will replicate what actual Navy SEALs go through, because those folks are pretty darn remarkable. But it's about as close as you can get for being a 45-year-old civilian. So one of those is something that I really want to try. Now, while I'm sure there's a little bit of an endurance component, I wouldn't be surprised if they make you do a 5 or a 7 mile, you know, run with a backpack or carrying a human being or something crazy. But most of those events will be calisthenics, but they'll also test your ability to communicate and have teamwork. Because from what I've been told, you know, you'll be given an assignment, you know, like carry this really heavy log 100 yards, and you've got to work together with a 3 or 4 strangers to be able to do that. And they work extra hard to make it as uncomfortable as possible. You know, spraying you in the face with cold water, you know, with a hose, or making you roll around in sand so you've got sand all over your body. Things to make it really, really tough. Plus, they're probably yelling some fairly colorful language at you while you're doing that. So I think something like that, a 24-hour fully immersive experience that would test the mind, the body, and the spirit is definitely on my radar. And then there are some fitness type events, you know, kind of like a CrossFit type event, almost like a decathlon, if you will, you know, where there's sled pushes and rope climbs and obstacle courses. So I'm going to give some of those a try as well. But I also want to stay very open to doing things that aren't just for the physical. You know, as much as I enjoy talking, you know, going on a 3-day silent retreat where you don't speak for 3 days would be incredibly challenging for me, but I'd be open to trying something like that. So my goal is just to stick with this, put the next thing on the calendar. So as soon as this rim to rim run in the Grand Canyon is over, I'll look to see if any of the things that I just mentioned, you know, if there's something that I could do in November or December, or maybe even in early January.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for taking the time to guest on your own podcast today.
Thank you for filling in for myself.
Well, that's it for me. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure to join the conversation at Alan Stein Jr. on all major social platforms. Go to alansteinjr.com to subscribe to my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails, and check out makeyourgameplan.com. I look forward to helping you raise your game.